This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2016, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 5.
Well, thanks for coming back, those of you who were brave enough to try to endure another round here before lunch of priorities for newer teachers. Yesterday, we worked to establish that having a lack of priorities is akin to walking around with a cardboard box over our head, a rather handicapped way in which to live. Isn't that right, Larry? Wherever he's at, there he is. He agrees with me. We also looked at the first of four priorities for the week, the priority of the implied promises or the commitments that come with being a teacher. We looked at the fact that the first step in meeting the teacher commitments is awareness. Wow, didn't realize we had so many bosses. And once we're aware, we can then move toward meeting those commitments by demonstrating character, competence, and humility. So today we want to look at a second priority. It's perhaps the most obvious priority in our profession. Without this priority, we would not have a profession. So today's priority is people. We want to look at people and some actions that teachers can take to make people the priority in their work. So action number one, how do I make people the priority in my classroom? By making sure that I am in the classroom for the right reason. Do you truly love people? Because if you do not love people, you're in the wrong business. If you do not love people, please go sell bulk foods, mow lawns, build storage barns, become an accountant, do anything except become a teacher. The crowning work of God's creation is people. And it's an honor to be given the privilege of serving people, particularly being given the keys of influence to the next generation. And the last thing our schools need is teachers who are shaping the attitudes of the next generation who do not love people. Now, just a reminder, if you're saying, well, how much do I love people? Love is a decision. Love is a commitment. And so this is something that can be changed. I'm hoping that if you're saying, boy, I'm not quite sure how much I love people, I'm hoping that this doesn't prompt a rash of resignations. If you're not sure, you can change that today. Now, so I'm going to assume that it's a given that we all love people. But I hope that we can even go a step further. I hope that we can enjoy people. It reminds me of an old friend. He was a friend and he was really old. His name was Harold. And Harold was a man who had, I forget, 6 or 8 children and was a mentor of mine. And his older children, I believe all professed faith in Christ, but his older children chose not to follow in his footsteps. He was an Anabaptist, a conservative Anabaptist, and his children chose not to follow in those footsteps. Harold's younger children chose to follow in a path much closer to the one he had chosen for himself. And so as an old man, Harold analyzed this. What was the difference between my older set of children and my younger ones? That the younger ones chose to embrace the things that I value. And he would tell us repeatedly, he said, we loved all of our children. But we enjoyed our younger children. And Harold viewed that as a significant difference in the choices that his children make and whether or not to embrace the path that he had chosen or whether to go a bit of a different route. So, can we not only love our students, can we also just enjoy them? As a teacher, I'm constantly looking for things to drag into my classroom. If interesting things, if they're educational, it's a bonus. But I love to enjoy discovery and love to enjoy new things with my students. Demonstrating a fascination with new discoveries, with interesting objects, with nature, and with things that are just plain goofy is a way of connecting with students. Typically, most of my students over the years, as well as some of the teachers around here, every so often get to see me pull out some of my favorites of things that are fascinating, educational, or just plain goofy. So, as an introduction to that, we'll go for one. Here is one of my weapons. Meet the Airzooka. How many of you know what this is? Yeah? Some of you. This won't hurt much. So, in case, for those of you who are not being hit, here, watch his hair. That's a good demo there. What this is a weapon that throws a ball of air across the room. And so I can hit you. Yeah, even back there. Ah, I missed you, didn't I? Ah, there, got him. It's a little bit of a delay when you're doing a long shot. There. There we go. Got him. And so this is one of those things that I ran across years ago. This is probably about my fourth or fifth Airzooka. And it's just a wonderful thing. You can use it in all kinds of ways in a classroom. Imagine the possibilities here. As a teacher, you know, the students are getting a little bit sleepy. Suddenly, they're not sleepy anymore. You know, you're calling on students and it's getting boring to say, John, Sam, so maybe you pick a student by whacking them with a puff of air. You know, as a principal, it was fun to just stand in the entryway of the school up on the second level. The students would come in off the buses in the morning, and here I am with my Airzooka trying to give every student a puff of air as they walk in the door. You know, it was great fun. Now, there was something wrong with the picture because I'd have students walking up to me saying, shoot me, shoot me, shoot me. And it's like, that doesn't sound right in today's world. But just great fun. You know, and then I'm a social studies teacher, so I don't have a very good explanation for what happens here. Social studies teachers are a little dense that way. But and the science teachers, they can actually figure out what's going on here and explain that. So there's an educational bonus. If you understand, and you know, we did try to analyze this. Is this simply starting a chain reaction, pushing air across the room, or is it actually throwing a ball of air across the room? So we, you know, sprayed some perfume in here, and then we shot it across the room, and you know, almost instantly you could smell perfume on the other side of the room. So it's like, okay, I think it is actually throwing a ball of air. I think our record was blowing out a candle at 30 feet with one of these. So anyway, you know, things that are educational, interesting, new, are just plain goofy. Just a great way to bond with students. You don't need to always have goofy objects, but they sure can facilitate the process. And you know, just to be a person who exudes interest and a love of learning and unique things. You know, I've been known to have my children walk through the school carrying dead animal carcasses, you know, a mink or a muskrat that I caught on the trap line and then, you know, fluffed up with my wife's hair dryer and, you know, took it through to demonstrate. There's endless numbers of possibilities of things you can drag into school that will make life interesting. And that kind of interest is contagious. If a teacher loves to learn and has that enthusiasm, it's hard not to catch it. Now, I did say that we need to love students and that we should even enjoy students, but there is another reality to acknowledge here. And that is the fact that we will not enjoy all students equally. Some students we connect with, and they become our biggest fans, and they're just plain fun to teach. But there are other students that aren't. Others remain aloof for a variety of reasons. But our job is still to serve all students well. And so, we as teachers, we train our behaviors. We train our attitudes. And sometimes our feelings will follow. Sometimes they won't. But as the teacher, as the adult in the room, we're responsible to train our behaviors and our attitudes. Do you love children? Do you enjoy children? Another one of my teachers over the years was a first grade teacher. Miss Burt, she's in her 29th year of teaching at Effort of Mennonite School, taught first grade all of those years in the same school. Now, first grade. I don't have the patience to teach first grade. There should be a special place in heaven for people that have the patience to teach first grade. But to teach first grade for 29 years and not be a cynical, nasty person is a significant accomplishment. And Miss Burt has done that well. Throughout her years, she talks about that when I retire, I'm going to write a book. And so she keeps her journal of all the goofy things that her students do. And so frequently in staff meetings or whatever, she'll, hey, I just need to tell you what I put in my journal for today, the next chapter for my book. And then she'll proceed into some story of what her first graders did that's just, you know, outlandishly funny. And the whole staff is just in stitches at what these first graders did. But after 29 years, she is still enjoying her students. And that has allowed her to impact countless lives. Now, students are not the only people a teacher serves. Parents are another prominent group that the teacher serves. And if this gig called teaching is going to stick for you, you need to learn to love parents too. You've been hired in many ways as a proxy for the parent. And if your teaching does not seek to build respect and honor for parents, you've got a problem. You will likely find parents to be some of your biggest fans, to be the people that encourage you and in dozens of ways, people that write notes, that send special treats, that give Christmas gifts, that catch you in the hallway or at church and express sincere gratitude for your work. I think typically the majority of parents are that way. And it's a wonderful blessing as we seek to support them. But you also need to realize that maybe 2% of the parents in your school will likely be your greatest grief. And you need to deal with that reality as well. Since that is reality, the question is, where will your focus be? In one of my
lives outside of school. I was an Amish country tour guide. Started out driving horse and buggy, graduated to a team of Belgian horses, and then eventually a tour bus with a headset. And as I would cruise through Amish country, telling folks from New York and New Jersey about the Amish, I would pass other tour buses. And my tourists who had been on those tour buses, you know, regulars around the county, they would tell me what other tour guides told them on their buses. And repeatedly, they would tell me that at least a certain company, they had a tour guide whose focus was on dissing the Amish. And I'm just thinking, okay, so you're making your living off of people who are fascinated about the Amish and wanting to learn about them. And when they come to your business, you spend your day dissing them. What a brilliant business plan. I know about the Amish. I exchanged voicemails with an Amishman last night. One of my closest friends is an Old Order Amishman. Dear, dear friend. But I'm aware that just like the rest of us, there's lots of Amish that have problems. And so, as a tour guide, my goal was to represent the best ideals among the Amish. And realism would peek in along the way, but my goal was to focus on the positive. And I would work to find good answers for why Amish people did what they did. And the fun part is when I'd hang out with my Amish friends, they'd sometimes say, "Now, why do we do this?" And they would look to me to explain why they did that. It was great fun. All your parents are going to have faults. And then just like the tour guides, it's your choice what you're going to focus on. Are you going to focus on the best ideals of your parents? Or are you going to highlight the negatives? And I don't say this naively. After about 2 decades in education, I've been through some very dark days. The school I led, we made some course corrections. There's some folks that didn't like those course corrections. Some of those people let us know. The devastation that a teacher feels when an angry, nasty, mean-spirited parent attacks you is powerful. And I think I'll take some of those scars to my grave. Now, I'm hopeful that as a teacher, your administrator, your principal is frontlining a lot of those things. But the fact of the matter is, every community has hurting people. And hurting people hurt people. It's what happens. And the question is, are you as a teacher going to still be able to love those people? If you're not in the classroom because you love people, it will be very hard to sustain your work for the long haul. So today, the priority is people. The first way of making people the priority in your classroom is to examine yourself and examine the reason that you are in the classroom. Are you in the classroom for the right reason? The second action to make people a priority in your classroom is to use the "is it good for my students" filter. It's to use the "is it good for my students" filter. The more time we spend in the classroom, the more we have a tendency to get set in our ways, whether or not our ways are actually good for students. Great teachers tend to see life at school through the lens of, is it good for my students? Poor teachers tend to view life at school through the lens of, is it good for me? Great teachers take responsibility for when their students don't grasp a concept,
What can I do differently to help my students? Poor teachers tend to blame the students. The gene pool's a little shallow around here. Great teachers are constantly on the lookout for creative ways to generate interest, to teach more clearly, to help their students become more successful. Poor teachers blame. They blame the prior year's teacher. They blame the home life. They blame the curriculum. They blame the school board. And they blame the student. What is the filter through which I run every idea? And I think, as a teacher, the default filter is it good for me? Will it require me to do something that I do not yet know how to do? Will it require extra effort or expense? Will it require more time? Now I'll pause for a disclaimer. There is a ditch on both sides of the road here too. A dead teacher doesn't typically do a lot of good either. You do need to know your limits. But there's an innate part inside of us that wants to say, is it good for me? And a great teacher asks the question, is it good for my students? Anabaptists tend to be efficient people. We're always looking for a way that's faster, easier, a way to get the job done. But the troubling thing about teaching is that it's an inherently inefficient process. Developing minds, shaping wills, inspiring dreams, nurturing broken people. It's messy. It's hard. And it's terribly inefficient. Just to stop a minute and to come up for air, I would like to hit the pause button and have you talk to your neighbor just a moment about, just wrestle with this idea of how do I install an is it good for students filter in my classroom. I just want you to wrestle with that, and you could go in a ton of different directions with this. There's no right or wrong answers here, but I'd like you to turn to your neighbor in just a moment and just talk about this. What are some temptations for using the is it good for me filter instead? Or what are some ways that I can safeguard and make sure that what I do is good for students? That's a tough question, but I want you to just dance around a little bit. So I'm going to give you 2 minutes to just turn to your neighbor and just wrestle with this a little bit. How do I install an is it good for students filter in my classroom? Go. All right, welcome back. Sounds like we had some good chatter going on, and I hope that you'll just take that conversation with you, because it's one of those inherent temptations in teachers to at some point switch the filter back to the default. And so it's one of those things that we need held in front of us over and over again as years go by in the classroom. So, today's priority is people. How do we make people priority? By making sure we're in the classroom for the right reason, and by using the is it good for my students filter. Action number 3 is becoming a student of your students. Becoming a student of your students. Learning to understand human behavior. It's a human tendency to focus on the negative. To focus on the positive for most of us is similar to resisting the force of gravity. It requires intentional, constant effort. In general, a positive focus will lead to a more sustained, voluntary effort than coercive force will. And yet, a lot of times, especially as new teachers, when we walk into the classroom and we don't know what to do, we haven't established our bag of tricks yet, a lot of times we end up falling back to some form of coercive force. Coercive force is effective at times. However, it is fraught with risks. And if it is used too often, it is almost certain to backfire. Coercive force is something that we all have, that we can use as a teacher. We can pull rank. This is not a toy. This is steel. This represents coercive force. The gentleman in the blue shirt right here is starting to get a little bit uncomfortable. This is real. This could hurt. Coercive force is a powerful thing. And when, as a teacher, when I wield coercive force, I feel very powerful. Because when I have this in your face, you will do what I say. But when I walk away, you probably won't. When I go around the corner, you'll have things to say. And my influence will quickly end. And so as a teacher, I have the tool of coercive force. It's powerful. Occasionally, I may use it. And of course, obviously, I'm not talking about a physical sword. Please. But we can pull rank. I'm the teacher. Just do what I say because I said so. That's coercive force. You're pulling rank. You're not inviting them. You're not helping to lead them. You're driving them with this right behind their neck. Coercive force. It can very, very easily backfire. And yet, I've been there, and I know many, many new teachers will find themselves in a state of frustration in their classroom, especially in that first year, reaching for coercive force. And I'm saying, be very, very careful. Many teachers just don't seem to get this. People like to be invited. They like to be inspired, not driven like a herd of cows. And it's really not rocket science. If we're not constantly, intentionally staying positive, we tend to become negative. And when we become negative, we tend to fall back to coercive force. And coercive force tends to lead to reaction. I'm going to reference Steel Ideas to Route and reference maybe twice or so this book, What Great Teachers Do Differently, 17 Things That Matter Most by Todd Whitaker. A great book, and it has some excellent stories in it. As we think about force, and not just force, it's just this idea of going negative or going positive, inviting versus driving. It's just fascinating because master teachers don't go around carrying this thing all day. They make it look easy. It's so annoying as a new teacher. It's so hard for us. We walk into a master teacher's classroom and they just effortlessly, they just do it. And I go and say the exact same words. I think in the exact same kind of voice and the students won't listen. It's frustrating. It's part of the joy of teaching, learning how it's done. But Todd has this story. Visiting a middle school a few years back, I was sitting in the back of a very effective teacher's classroom. The class was quietly focused on important projects. Suddenly, a whole school announcement came over the loudspeaker, interrupting every class in the building. The principal issued the following proclamation. Students in this school must immediately stop thumping. There have been too many students in the school thumping other students. Thumping is when you pull back your middle finger with your thumb and then release it so that it strikes another person sharply in the chest. We will have no more thumping in this school. Anyone caught thumping should be sent to the office. End of announcement. Well, Todd says, as I looked around the room, not one student was still focused on the project. Instead, 29 students were practicing some form of thumping. On themselves or on a partner. In fact, I soon realized that I too was sitting there thumping myself, just to see what it felt like. Our most challenging students tend to be contrary by nature. In fact, there's a streak of contrary in all of us. I do not want to hear a single peep. Who among us hearing that isn't tempted to peep? Or waiting, even hoping for someone else to peep? And yet, until we heard that command, we might not have been thinking of peeping at all. It's learning how the human mind works. And it just seems like as humans, we have an inherent bent toward reacting to our students in ways that push their buttons and cause reaction. And if we can start become a student of our students and learn ways to instead channel them in the right direction. I have sheep. When I lead my sheep, it's a beautiful thing. For a while, we didn't have a fence this spring. We let the sheep out to graze the yard until they found their way to the neighbors across the road. But in the evening, when they were done grazing, I'd go out and I'd head my weird call. Pardon me. I'd go, baa, sheep, baa, baa, sheep, baa. And I'd start running toward the barn and all the sheep would just, whoom. I had to be careful. I'd get run over. But you try and drive those same sheep, good luck. I mean, totally mindless, crazy, they will make you angry. Stupid sheep. But if you lead them, along they come. I'd like to say there's a miracle formula for bringing people along. We had a bull that got out. I raised Scottish Highland cattle, big shaggy guys with big horns, and the bull got out. And I was not real thrilled about trying to get him in. You go down and try and chase him. He wasn't interested. So what'd I do? I got my big blue bucket, put some sweet feet in it, went down on the neighbor's property, got Geronimo to stick his head in the bucket. I really did not like being that close to Geronimo with those big horns. But I got Geronimo to stick his head in that bucket of sweet feed. And I just started backing up. And I had a ways to go, let me tell you. But I backed right up through the neighbor's meadow, right through the neighbor's brush pile, right through a hole in the fence that I had created, right through my yard, frantically motioned for my wife to open the gate to the pasture. And I backed Geronimo right into the pasture. Beautiful. If I tried to chase Jerry, we'd probably still be chasing him. But in the world of people, that sweet feet is called relationship. There's a saying that rules without relationship equals rebellion. Now, that's not in the Bible, so it's a working theory. Clearly, God gave us rules, and he gave us the ultimate in relationship, and sometimes we still rebel. Many times. But I've found it in general to be true. Rules without relationship equals rebellion. If you can add a respectful, healthy relationship to the equation, you can do almost anything with your students. It was crazy. Last year I taught 9th or 10th grade literature here. And one day I was teaching, I forget what the piece of literature was, but it was something that had to do with, I think the author wrote it in prison. And so I thought my students looked entirely too comfortable in their neat rows and desks. And so I began yelling at my students. I ordered them out of their seats. I ordered them to line up. I marched them down the hallway. I marched them up the steps. I marched them over into some forsaken part of the building. I marched them down the concrete stairs, yelling at them as we went. And down there in this concrete dungeon, I said, "Sit on the floor." Then I went upstairs to the pantry and I got a box of crackers and I threw it down the steps and said, "Eat!" And I said, "Now, write a reflection from prison." Depending on what school I'd done that in, I'd have been fired. But because of the relationship I had with those students, it was a powerful learning experience. And I had parents thanking me for teaching their children literature. It was sort of embarrassing, almost, how much they thanked me. You know, I yell at your kids, I throw them in prison, I tell them to, you know, eat food, I throw on the floor. But because there was a relationship, they were able to learn at a powerful level to process emotions and experiences that they wouldn't have processed in their desk. If there wasn't a relationship, they likely would have ended up reacting. And I, well, may have been fired. And I'm serious. Don't try this at home. Until you have a very powerful trust established with parents and a relationship with your students. That clock is just being really mean to me today. Become a student to your students. Develop an insatiable thirst for understanding human behavior. You know, and in contrast to the sword that I pulled out earlier, I have this sword, my rubber sword. It's not nearly as intimidating. I can even take a whack or two. Humor is the rubber sword. It allows you to make a point without drawing blood. And humor is your friend. As you become a student of your students, as you learn to understand human behavior, as you learn how to impact your students and develop relationships with them, humor is your friend. Learn to use that rubber sword. It allows you to make a lot of points bloodlessly. Going to have to dump the water dumper story and skip to the end. My heart aches for what I see in too many of our schools. I hear about tough classes. I hear about carnage. I hear about teachers who are at their wits' end. And students full of reaction. My heart aches because I know that in most cases this carnage is preventable. I know that in most cases if I could pick another teacher, a skilled teacher, and send him into that same classroom with those same students, we could have a totally different result. Sometimes us old geezer teachers hear about a class of tough cookies and I just long to have a crack at them. It's like, boy, that'd be fun. Those people who've put in a decade or two in the classroom and have learned some of these skills. It doesn't have to be this way. Teachers all have the same tools, the same punishments, the same rewards. It's just that some teachers know how to use them. Just like if you give me a fully equipped stonemason's van, all the tools I could dream of, could I go build a beautiful castle? No. I don't know how to use them. I have the tools, but I lack the training and the skill to use them. Teachers have the same ability to ground students, to make them write sentences, to send them to the principal's office, to do whatever, to yell them out, to compliment them. All those tools, we all have access to the same tools, but we use them differently to great, drastically different results. And as I see students in schools where a lack of skill is being put in place, I see students learning patterns of rebellious behavior, patterns that are preventable if we had skilled teachers leading those classrooms and not pushing their buttons, but learning how to draw them, to lead them, to inspire them. I see students developing patterns of reaction and rebellion that are so predictable. And then I watch those students carry those attitudes into their teens and into life. And I watch some of those students carry those attitudes right out of the church. And almost as concerning, I watch some of those students carry those attitudes and stay in the church. Teaching is not for everyone. For some, teaching may be but a pit stop on your life's journey. But I beg you to consider the possibility of taking a long-term view toward teaching. We need people who are willing to invest in becoming a skilled teacher. A teacher who knows how to use the steel sword if they need to, but very rarely. A person who's skilled at using the rubber sword a whole lot more often. A student who knows how to inspire, to love, to paint a positive vision. Our schools, our churches, and our communities desperately need teachers who love students. Teachers who are committed to adjusting their methods to what is best for students. And we need teachers who are committed to being students of their students so that they can serve them effectively over the long haul.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.